Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
With all due respect, and remember, I'm saying with all due respect.
Here with Nick Wilson.
I am America's sports talk show host. Hear me roar.
Stan Norfleet here.
Hey, it was just a misunderstanding.
No, it ain't.
Oh, bleep you. Get off my...
Bye, Gomez.
Bye, Gomez, right. The both of you.
Do I detect some kind of sarcasm here?
Never.
That's going to do it. Hornets inbound and wind down the clock. Charlotte will settle for silver linings tonight. Final score 133-119 in favor of the Bulls, who saw five players go in double figures, including a season-high 30 points from Nikola Vucevic, who has just been a Hornet killer.
Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. That was the final call of the Hornets 133-119 loss last night in Chicago to the Bulls. Courtesy of Sam Farber and the Hornets Radio Network. We got the rundown coming up in 40 minutes. If you just joined us, Dante Jackson has been shut down for the rest of the season. He's on IR. Brent Pry, old BP as we call him. He's the
Nobody
new head coach.
Nobody knows who he is.
But the people who do know him, we call him BP.
Like, you have no idea who
like
he is.
Like the oil spill. He is the new head coach of Virginia Tech, but we were talking about the Hornets' loss to the Bulls as a model for the Hornets here, and to go ahead and continue that Hornets conversation, we welcome on the best, the man, the myth, the legend, Yoma's Hornets beat reporter for the Charlotte Observer, the great Rod Boone joins us now. Rod, welcome back to the show, my guy.
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing today, man?
What's happening, Ron?
It seems like between the Panthers and Hornets, especially after that Hornets loss last night, we're going toe-to-toe on everything here. I'm curious. JB put a lot on this last night about the absence of Cody Martin and Mason Plumlee. How much of last night's loss was the absence of two of their better defenders?
I wouldn't say it was a lot of it, but it's probably enough to say that they missed those two guys. I mean, Mason Plumlee, it's funny because a lot of people, you know, on Twitter essentially have not liked his game this year. They feel like he's been a liability. But as we've seen last couple of games here, Mason Plumlee is what he is. Is he going to blow you away? No. But he's solid at times as a rim protector. He gives you fouls. He plays hard. He catches the ball. It can finish plays for you with a mellow ball, you know, dishing off to him. So, they missed him for sure, but really they missed Cody Martin. Cody Martin is by far the Hornets' best defender. And it's funny, too, because a lot of fans didn't think he was that very good of a player. But as we've seen this year, he's not only great defensively, but he's been good on offense, too. So they missed him a lot last night because whenever the game starts off in a rough fashion for them, they're not playing great defense. Who's JB go to first? Cody Martin. So in that regard, they definitely missed those two guys, but you can't put the whole loss on them being not available last night.
So I'm of the mindset, Rod, and you may have heard this from me just in us talking ball offline. I think teams like Chicago, based on where the Hornets finished last season and the moves in the offseason, including the draft, Chicago got significantly better. There's a reason they're number two in the East. When I would look at specifically Nikola Vucevic last night, you see the stat line, 30 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists to just 2 turnovers and 2 block shots. I'm reminded of the 3 he knocked down on that 20-7 run to close out the first half. I don't know that Mason is doing anything to negate a force like Nikola Vucevic. Are we back to having the big conversation again?
I think we are. But here's the thing, too, man, is that if you didn't think that Mason Plumlee is a stopgap, then you weren't really paying attention because the Hornets had to improve the position. They weren't going to bring back Bismack Biyombo, as we see, he's out of the league right now, okay? Cody Zeller, they had their fill of him, you know, for 7 to 8 years and figured it's time to move on from him. So they had to figure out how do they plug that hole in the middle. They went out and traded for Mason Plumlee because he's available, veteran player. Again, is he going to blow you away? Absolutely not. Is he going to go out there and shut down Vucevic? Not saying that either. but he gives you a better inside presence at times than what they had previously. The thing with the Hornets is, like anything else, their big men seem to have issues in terms of they have good parts of their game and also bad parts of their game. And it's like the other player, like for example, you know, you want to throw Nick Richards out there. Nick Richards is a bigger body. He can finish, you know, but he still has to learn how to play defense, how to make sure he stays in front of his man, how not to foul. So I think that's part of the issue is the Hornets have a couple of players at center who have their flaws and issues. And Mason's definitely one of them, as is Nick Richards. But when you combine them, they're good enough for now. But for sure, they got to find an upgrade at some point in the next, you know, few months here.
Rod Boone, Hornets beat reporter for the Charlotte Observer with Nick and Stan. Breaking down the latest with this young Hornets team. They currently sit sixth in the Eastern Conference here. You look at the splits there. The Hornets are 7-2 at home, and they're 6-8 away from the Spectrum Center. Now, in fairness, part of that would be the big losing streak that they had on the road here. Do you see, now that, outside of that road trip that they had out west that was disastrous, do you see a huge difference between them at home and on the road? And if so, what do you think is the cause of that difference?
I wouldn't say it's a huge difference, but I think there's definitely something going on between home and road. But part of it is this. The schedule has been insane the first month plus of the season. They played, as you said, a gaggle of road games. So with a young team building, trying to figure themselves out, the road is tough for them because even though you're in that bunker mentality, us against them, the world, so to speak, the crowds, as we see, are back in full throat as they were pre-COVID. They're playing really good teams. They're playing a lot of road games. I believe they played more games than anybody else in the NBA, if not mistaken, so far. So all that into account, the Hornets got to be better on the road still. But give them a little bit of slack because they played so many road games thus far. But what I've seen, as you said, the difference is probably defensively, they're not very good on the road so far. A lot of their worst efforts on defense have come away from home. They've had a couple at home, too, but they played better at home because the crowd's more into it. They have more juice. You go on more runs. You just feel better in front of your own fans and your own environment. But on the road so far, these games, they're getting up to these slow starts. And on the road, you can't get up to a slow start and then expect to kind of come back and win those games. Because the crowd gets into it early. The team gets excited. And that's what Terry Rozier told me last night. One of the big things the Hornets have had issue-wise is these slow starts. When you give the other team out there confidence they can go out there and compete with you, whether they're better than you or not, it just sometimes doesn't help you out in the long run. So the Hornets have to be much better from the start, these games on the road, to be able to win some of these, because right now they're not doing that frequently enough.
Rod, in the rubber match of Ball brothers going at it there, LaMelo one-on-one gets the better end of Lonzo. Speak to what you saw from the young star last night.
It was something to see, man. It was really kind of cool because, you know, I don't care who you are. If anybody has a brother, older brother, younger brother, when you play sports growing up, you want to beat the crap out of them. You know what I mean? So to see those guys go head-to-head and, like, do it in a respectable way, I didn't see any trash talking. I didn't see any like laughing. Like, they were really serious about their craft. They want to go out there and put on a show for the respective teams. I was really impressed with LaMelo, how he was able to, you know, he had two fouls early. And as we know, it's been one of his issues this year, foul trouble. But he got two fouls early, and JB left him in the game for a while. He didn't pick up that third foul. So that's good on him as he showed maturity there and making sure he's available for his team. The next thing, though, is just to make sure those ticky-tack fouls aren't even coming because if you notice most of his fouls, they're really like touch fouls or reaching in, stuff like that. He's not you know, running over anybody or hacking somebody hard on a dunk attempt. He has to be able to just make sure he uses his fouls wisely. But I liked what I saw from him last night. He's definitely maturing. If you look at his numbers the last 10 games, he's averaging about almost 20 points a game, about 9.7 assists, 9.1 rebounds. I mean, triple-double walking, which is crazy at this point to be second year in the league and just be where he is right now. So good showing from him last night. Obviously, he could have shot the ball a little bit better, but you're a Hornets fan, seeing that you have a budding star, LaMelo, you know, playing well, taking these challenges to a head is good for you.
Rod Boone with Nick and Stan here talking some Hornets basketball. I want to keep it there though, because LeVar, the head of the Ball family, has said this week on TMZ that LaMelo's going to win an MVP. How far away? Not from the MVP conversation, obviously. Oh. How far away do you think LaMelo is of being a consistent all-star caliber player night in, night out?
I give him maybe another year or so, man, because he's right there right now. Now it's just more about just fine-tuning his craft, getting that jump shot to fall a little bit more, cutting back on turnovers, playing better defense. Like, when he does all those things that become the complete package, he'll be an all-star for, like, perennial for years to come. And if you're a Hornets fan, just think about that. Just think about the fact that you have this budding star who can be somebody you can build around for years to come. And somebody who, from all accounts, wants to be here long term. So the Hornets have to just do what they can and just make sure that LaMelo is just growing, not only as a person, but as a player in the basketball court. Make sure he's in the film room. Make sure he's in the gym. And he's a gym rat anyway. So I think we're probably a year or so away at most from seeing him develop into that next level player, per se. But I asked his brother about last night, Lonzo Ball, about what the difference is between year one and year two from LaMelo. And he said basically it's more about just him knowing his role and knowing that, hey, this is his team now. You know, last year, the rookie, you're not sure who's the man. But right now, even though they have Gordon Hayward on the team, Terry Rozier on the team, it's LaMelo's team because he makes the team go. And when he plays well, they're hard to beat. So to answer your question, well, I think that LaMelo's about a year or so away from maybe becoming a perennial all-star.
Two guys that I want to highlight before we rock. Obviously, Terry Rozier has his offensive stroke back. What did he have? I think he had a game-high 31 last night. So T-Row appears to be in his groove. And to accompany that, although the lead was 23 points at one time, Gordon Hayward's 14 points in the fourth quarter. I thought he was really aggressive. I think he had 7 points in a row at one stretch off the top of my head. The performance of those two in the grand scheme of the outcome of last night?
It was something that was needed because the Hornets didn't have a lot of scoring last night. It was weird to watch the box score through the first half. You know, they had a couple of guys who were, you know, scoring. P.J. Washington, he hit 4 threes in the first half. He had it going. But beyond that, like, Miles wasn't playing very well. But you're right. To get Gordon and Terry Rozier going was big for them because the Hornets had, as we know, very many. They have several playmakers. So for them, it's more about who's hot at that moment and feeding the hot hand and just making sure the ball is flowing. And I feel like last night the ball didn't flow as it usually has. They didn't have a lot of assists that they usually have. And, you know, Terry Rozier and Gordon Hayward played well, but they didn't get enough from everybody else. And the Hornets are at their best when you have four or five guys in double figures, when you have the entire starting five out there dropping dimes and scoring 10-plus points apiece. That's when they're at their best. Last night, it was a little bit too much one-on-one. The fourth quarter, they made a comeback. But you can just feel that at some point, the Bulls just kind of wait to get their shot to kind of fall, which they did. So it was a good showing by Terry and Gordon. But you want to see that for sure from not only them, but from everybody else every game because the Hornets can score. It's more about, too, about their defense. But you want to be able to go out there and outscore your team so that for your defense not playing well in that given night that you're going to win these games.
Follow this man on the Twitter machine, at Rod Boone. He is the Charlotte Hornets beat reporter for the Charlotte Observer, Rod Boone. Rod, great stuff as always, man. Really do appreciate your thoughts today.
You got it, guys. Have a great one.
Do the same, Rod.
Good man, Rod Boone there. We have plenty to get to. We have to continue to get into the loss of Dante Jackson for the Carolina Panthers and what that means and where that means for the Carolina Panthers. But you can be the ninth caller right now. It's 704-570-9610, and you'll win a pair of tickets to the ACC championship game between Pittsburgh and Wake, or Pitt and Wake, this weekend in Charlotte. Plenty more chances to win across WFNZ this week. Good luck from WFNZ. Sports. Sports Radio FNC, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet. What a busy Tuesday. As we round out November, it seems like we're rounding out the Panther season. The latest here is, by the way, I want to congratulate Jason. He just won the two tickets to Saturday's ACC title game at Bank of America Stadium. We're going to have more opportunities to go ahead and win some tickets throughout.
My boy Jason?
No, my guy Jason.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
I thought maybe that was the Jason, like I told y'all about my guy.
No, he was like, and he made it very clear, I'm Nick's guy. That's what he said. When he won the tickets from Itty Bitty Fitty. We do have the rundown coming up in 20 minutes, but alongside Brent Pry being named the head coach at Virginia Tech, we had more news from the Carolina Panthers. Mm-hmm. Dante Jackson on the IR.
Oh, not good news.
No.
Is there any good news for the Panthers?
We should just assume it's not good news. At this point in the season, unless I say it's good news, just assume it's bad news. Yesterday was about Christian McCaffrey going on the IR. He'll be done for the rest of the season, and now it's Dante Jackson. The timing of this really sucks.
How many starters are we down? So I'm saying
overall
from the opening roster.
This week.
No, overall from the roster. So Irving, Paradis, Dante, CMC,
J.C. Horn,
that's five.
Mm-hmm. Sam Darnold, don't forget old Slappy Sam.
Slapping Sammy, he's down. Wow.
Yeah.
One of those years, huh?
It seems to be that way. And I do think, when we were talking about Christian McCaffrey earlier, I don't know who's shutting it down. All right? And I would never speculate specifically to Christian, whom I think is a really quality dude. We've had a couple people take weird shots at Christian McCaffrey. I don't get it.
I do.
Why?
Because it's human nature to preserve yourself.
Well, no. I don't understand Panther fans who are angry at Christian McCaffrey because he's been injured.
No,
a player cannot help himself. And the idea that we should assume Christian McCaffrey is all self-preservation.
But I don't think we can assume to the extreme on the other end either.
I don't think we should assume anything. Christian McCaffrey isn't playing, and one of three entities shut him down. Either McCaffrey himself, Matt Rhule, or Dave Tepper.
That's what I said earlier. And I don't care which of those entities it is. All I care about is he's not on the field again, and they don't have a backup plan, either by scheme or by capable kind of a bell cow back, which I don't believe Chuba Hubbard is a guy you get a ball to 25 times.
But with Dante Jackson also being out, it's fair to ask, at large, are the Panthers shutting it down? Because some of this might just be
coincidence.
Well, I would never use the word coinkydink. Hopefully, they don't at the organization.
I'm pretty sure coinkydink.
Guys, this is just a big old coinkydink here. All right.
Would it surprise you if Matt Rhule had a sign in the office that said,
"Don't coinkydink yourself"? There's a part of me that wonders: did they just get into this, realize that it was going to be a push to get either Dante or CMC back, and that this isn't related to the way football has been played recently? I think there's a chance that that's at play, but we can't ignore. We've gone from the Arizona win to Washington and Miami losses, now into the bye losing two of your best starters. That is, again, I think a lot of what's going on with the Carolina Panthers has been circumstantial. But I think it was John, one of our followers, who's one of our big listeners here, is Jimmy, excuse me, who said it just doesn't, things don't feel right now for the Carolina Panthers.
I said this yesterday. As a matter of fact, it may have been off air. I was talking to somebody here in the building that's affiliated with the Carolina Panthers, and I said, it's not about do I want Matt Rhule out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about if David Tepper is a good owner or not, meaning, it's about how does it feel?
Uh-huh. And how does it look?
And how does it look? But also, like, in terms of Matt Rhule being the right guy for this team. I made the point yesterday, there's a difference in being able to coach and a team responding.
Mm-hmm.
Those things don't always go together. And so I had the individual that I was speaking to said, Stan, I got to be honest, and I'm as Panther as they come. This doesn't feel right.
So I think from the individual on the field product side of things, the things that have hampered them, and I don't mean to beleaguer this point, I just mean it as a reference point here, third downs, the penalties, literally beating yourself. After prioritizing it last year, because all you did last year was beat yourself.
And let me be clear, the pre-snap penalties.
Yes.
offsides, false start, and the personal fouls. That's dumb.
So you either coach it or allow it. That's right. Something you've said quite a bit.
I believe that, yes.
So we've got some signs here that coaching isn't great. Then you have to pair it with personnel decisions. Matt Rhule chose Teddy Bridgewater, and then the organization at large threw Teddy Bridgewater under the bus and made it seem and Mobile, when they were coaching Mac Brown and the other quarterbacks, they told everyone who would listen, Teddy Bridgewater is the reason we went 5-11 last year. They threw Teddy Bridgewater outside of Carolina under the bus.
And they gave a little bit to Marty Herney on the way out the door, too.
Oh, they gave him a boot. And a little bit of a kick. And then their decision was to turn around with Sam Darnold. Now, they chased big fish, but they settled on a guy who was a reclamation project, who failed 10 games into the season. So I've got on-field issues that point to real coaching issues, mm-hmm. right? That point to cultural issues, if we're being fair. Then we've got questionable personnel moves that have turned into even more, like going from Cam Newton to Teddy Bridgewater to Sam Darnold back to Cam Newton is about as questionable as it comes.
Wow, passing on Mac Jones, passing on Justin Fields, not going to get Deshaun Watson, not getting Matthew Stafford.
So we've got things that point on the field to coaching issues. We've got personnel issues, which are clearly impacting the personnel of the coaching issues. And now, when you kind of need, like, the next five games are going to go a long way to tell us what Matt Rhule really is. Because last year, one of the big things that people hung their hat on with Matt Rhule, and I was one of them, guys didn't give up down the stretch. You won that meaningless game against Washington, which cost you a top three pick.
At Green Bay comes to mind as well. They fought.
And we said, Matt Rhule still has that locker room. Now, these might just be coinkydinks. These might just be Dante got hurt and Christian McCaffrey got hurt and them's to breaks. But that word alignment keeps coming back into my head.
Benching of Derrick Brown. Deactivation of Terrace Marshall Jr.
Listen to Phil Snow. That comment, Hassan Reddick talking about, you know, our leaders need to do a better job.
Brian Burns, passionate plea during the Miami game on the sidelines.
So you start to put it all together, and it just feels like there isn't an alignment in Carolina. Even when people have questioned who made the real call on Cam Newton. Was that a Tepper decision? Was that a Matt Rhule decision? Was that a Scott Fitterer decision? Were they all in alignment? I'm not saying Rome is burning. I'm not saying they're dysfunctional. But one of the telltale signs of a dysfunctional organization is a herky-jerky season, right? Is a team losing its competitiveness very quickly. Three of their last 10 games, they've lost by 10 or more points. And by the way, Dallas loss, in reality, was a double-digit loss, even though it wasn't on paper. That Minnesota loss, even though it went to overtime, that was a double-digit loss until the final quarter, the final 6 minutes of that game.
Teams are out-physicaling you at the point of attack,
mm-hmm.
at both lines of scrimmage. Nick, it's not confusing. And I know we're going like, you're not saying Rome is burning. I'm not saying it's necessarily time to panic.
But I am saying it could be.
Because they're still technically, remotely in the wild card hunt.
And there is, technically, five games left in the season.
This is going to be about, without Dante, by the way, the word on Dante is still, this is of Joe Person of The Athletic, still to be determined whether Dante needs surgery or not. It does not look like Christian McCaffrey will need surgery. Is there enough talent over there
mm-hmm.
for them to still be competitive given that schedule coming December and January?
Yes.
Yeah, they should still be competitive, and there still should be at least one win over there. Maybe more.
And there maybe should be more. New Orleans is turning to Taysom Hill as their full-time quarterback.
I saw he got first-string reps.
Mm-hmm. The Buffalo Bills, although Buffalo's coming off a nice win, Buffalo was up and down in November. I mean, even Tampa Bay coming off their last two wins, two games before that, they're playing like crap.
But no, we're not going to do that again this year. Tampa's Tampa.
Nope, Tampa's
we're not,
trash.
We're not doing
we're
that.
We're saying it again.
We're not doing that again.
But I do think it's fair to look at this. Maybe this is just a vibe check segment. Because we were gonna talk specifically about the Christian McCaffrey injury. I do want to get back to that here in a minute. Mm-hmm. But how concerned are you guys? Because I'm looking at the big picture, right? I'm looking at the last two games. I'm looking at a loss of competitiveness here. I'm looking at some of the chatter, some of Matt Rule's words, some of Hassan Reddick's words. I'm looking at the injuries piling up. I'm looking at, is there symmetry between Dave Tepper and Matt Rule? And I'm starting to get concerned.
Where are all the people in the media that stood on the table for Matt Rule at the start of the year? Where are those people? Mm-hmm. We don't hear or read. I read Football Morning in America, Peter King, every week. Hadn't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've seen Matt Rule rumored to some college jobs, which, sidebar, by the way, I heard a rumor yesterday that there are some interests one way or the other in Matt Rule in Oklahoma.
Where's Jimmy Johnson and the Marlin they caught together?
Yeah, Jimmy. Fox on NFL. Jimmy, where's that? Nothing? So it's fair to ask alignment. More important for me is, what is the fix?
Mm-hmm.
Matt Rule, this is an opportunity for Matt Rule to really garner some favor with me and with some of the fan base. They go 500 down this stretch. If they go 2-3 down this stretch and they don't have a loss by double digits,
mm-hmm.
people will go, okay, Matt Rule, way to respond.
Agreed.
I'll be patient going into year three. It looks like what we've seen 7 of the last 9 weeks, he's going to lose that locker room. And he's going to lose his fan base.
Well, and I think if you're in the locker room today, you're out there in Tahiti, maybe you're in South Beach. I don't know where these dudes are going on by the way.
You're in Turks, you're in Tulum.
Wherever you are,
yeah.
If you see Christian McCaffrey, Dante Jackson, and successive days being put on the IR after you've lost two straight games, and quite frankly, it's disingenuous just to point it that way. They've lost 7 of 9. And now you've lost two of your best players.
You know what the offensive line looked like.
I do wonder whether or not this is a white flag. Well, I don't know that it's an intentional white flag. Matt Rule last year, when they could have quote-unquote tanked, when maybe they should have, to have gotten a top-3 pick, Matt Rule was defiant in saying that. So I don't think Matt Rule's actively saying, all right, guys, let's lose some football games.
No.
And I think he knows this slippery slope.
But there also could be his boss. Tep could be like, I now recognize the mistake that I made last year in not making you tank. And David Tepper could be saying, I'm not going to make that same mistake this year. I want you to shut down anybody that's close. And maybe that's what we're getting from CMC. It is just odd. And I want the people to understand, it is odd for someone, not even 48 hours after playing a game, to have an X-ray and an MRI. The X-ray revealed no breaks. The MRI is going to be, obviously, soft tissue, ligaments, and all of that. And for no surgery to appear to be needed for either one, to be done for the year, and you haven't even gotten back. Let's see how you respond to treatment and get back in the building.
Well, and it was, like you said, it could be as simple as Christian McCaffrey. The MRI was negative Sunday night, and he had swelling. There were complicating issues on Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
But they pulled the rug really quickly. And so I guess my point is, a lot of this is circumstantial. A lot of this could just be, we had the conversation but after the New England game, or maybe it was before the New England game. I don't know. Time is a flat circle. But we had the conversation. Is it as bad as it looks? And at the time I said, I don't know it is. They just lost a bunch of really close games together. And it just felt like, man, if Sam can reel it in a little bit, start running the ball more, that's going to help the defense. I honestly don't know. I think it is as bad as it looks. I think it actually might be worse than it looks. I think there are enough warning signs right now to say, Matt Rule, you're coaching for something here. And to this staff, I'm talking to Matt Rule, I'm talking to the whole organization. Guys, this isn't just about 5 games left in the season. This is about, I don't care, he's got 5 more years in the contract. This is about the livelihood of Matt Rule. Matt Rule keeping a locker room. Matt Rule keeping the organization all the way in alignment in his camp.
And ultimately, that's Dave Tepper. Tepper, don't allow pride to keep you locked into or bound to a situation that you have the financial wherewithal to rectify this. This is modern NFL. It doesn't take 3 years to determine if you have the right dude or not.
And you're also, more importantly, you're also more talented. It should not be going this, even after losing McCaffrey, even after losing Dante Jackson, even though you're very untalented in the offensive line and the quarterback spot is a question, you're too talented for them to finish this season where it feels like they're going. What do the losses of Dante Jackson and Christian McCaffrey mean for the Carolina Panthers? More to come on the Rundown next on Sports Radio FNZ. Sports Radio FNZ, Nick Wilson, Stan Norfleet, Scott Fowler, columnist for the Charlotte Observer, joins us in about 20 minutes here.
Scotty.
But in the meantime, Dante Jackson, shut it down! He's on the IR. Christian McCaffrey, shut it down! He's on the IR. Dan Arnold, not in Carolina anymore, but shut it down!
He's on IR.
He's on the IR. If you've ever been any part of a Panthers win, you have been shut down.
Sam Darnold's throwing again.
Shut it down! Deonte Brown?
Welcome back from IR.
Shut it on! I didn't know how to say that. However, that is the latest we've had in the NFL here in Carolina. Brent Pry is the new head coach of the Virginia Tech Hokie football program.
He cried when he left Happy Valley, too. There were tears.
No, because he wasn't crying his way to $110 million.
He's crying his way to several million.
If you missed it earlier... Do we have that audio in here? I don't want to spoil it.
Oh, my God.
Do we have that audio of Lincoln Riley crying
Why
in this or no?
Why is such a thing for you?
No, because you had made a reference to it. At 11 o'clock, we came back with Crocodile Tears Lincoln Riley. And here was Lincoln Riley saying goodbye to Oklahoma.
I think it would not be fitting for me to recognize the University of Oklahoma, the impact that it had on me, the people there. This was obviously, I told the team earlier, toughest decision of my life to come here. And it's those people there were tremendous to me. And so, thank you.
It's a very emotional time.
I'm grateful for them. I'm grateful for my time here. That's one of the best college football programs in the country and has been forever and will continue to be. So very thankful for my time here.
Hey, Lincoln Riley, with those cheers, shut it down!
You are the most insensitive human being on
radio. You know why Lincoln Riley should be crying? Tears of joy. $110 million.
He was going to get 90-something from Oklahoma
USC
anyway.
USC buying both his homes in Norman for $500K over asking.
And the reason he had two homes, they had just built one and were in the process of moving into it.
Uh-huh.
So he was responsible for two homes at the same time.
Buying a $6 million home in Los Angeles for him and unlimited use of the private jet 24/7 for his family. That's why he should be crying. And you know what he should do? He should hit Boomer Sooners with a... Back Elma.
No.
A little bit of DX crotch chop on the way out.
You are. The man went through an emotional decision making process with his family. His family, they are being displaced
from
their roots in Oklahoma.
I literally left my hometown, my dream job that I got, and I was so blessed to be on the air in Cleveland. I left my hometown. And did I make sure to tell everyone I loved him? Did I make sure to say, hey, guys, I'm able to continue to succeed and thrive moving on because of you guys and your support? Yes. Did I sit there going, you know, nobody else could have hosted these 5 hours with me the way you guys did? And by the way, guys, I wasn't walking on to $110 million.
You shed tears of utter thankfulness from the heavens when you saw what a former company was offering you to come here, but you still wanted to be with your guys. I'm going to call your bluff. I'm contacting Adam the Bull. Mm-hmm. I'll be in touch with my Cleveland.
Ask him if I ever shed tears on air about leaving.
You literally had tears in your beer when you left Cleveland.
That sounds like an awful band, by the way. Tears in Your Beard.
It's a country music song.
No, that's a great Hank Williams Sr.
Thank
song.
You. I know my country music.
Let's get into the Rundown here. As we've had CBS Sports host Zach Gelb on our show plenty of times in the past, he's hey, that's a Matt Rhule man right there. Zach Gelb. And last night with Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame, Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma, Gelb believes both schools could be interest to somebody here in Carolina. Matt Rule.
Where's this going? 7-8 weeks ago, I would have said you're crazy. I would have said there's no chance. Uh-oh. But after 2 years of having no run CMC.
Wow. Whoa.
On a 7-year deal.
Whoa.
I'm not saying he's leaving. I still believe that he'll be the head coach of the Carolina Panthers next year. And I think I may have called people morons and idiots for even suggesting this with Penn State.
You, sir.
Oh, yeah. He's not going to go to lousy Penn State.
You, sir, had some takes.
Oh, he's not going to go to lowly Penn State. Oklahoma, well. Notre Dame. Does Matt Rule say, I'm in Carolina. I don't have a franchise quarterback. My best player in Christian McCaffrey, he's always injured. I could go be the head coach of Notre Dame or Oklahoma. Does Matt Rule turn that down? Does Matt Rule then start to pick up the phone, go to David Tepper and go, hey, Dave, I got to get out of this 7-year contract.
Listen, I respect your man's Gelb for at least coming around.
Mm-hmm.
And being open.
And he's not reporting this.
No, this is just opinion. We're in the opinion business. I'm not mad at him for coming around to just being open to maybe this thing just doesn't fit in Carolina. And here's what's interesting. Look at the jobs, the power jobs across the country that are locked up long term and that may not become available for another 10 years. USC, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Penn State is locked up, James Franklin. Florida just got Billy Napier. Jimbo's locked in solid. Dabo locked in solid. Saved locked in. Where else you going? I'm talking about power. LSU is about to get there, man. Where else you going to go? Texas. Who knows what's going on in Texas?
Let's be clear. This isn't about Oklahoma or Notre Dame. This is about how bad things have gone. If Matt Rule leaves, he could have left. He could have shown interest in LSU or Florida. Both those jobs, I would say, are better jobs than Notre Dame or Oklahoma, although I understand they're relatively in the same plane of existence. But he could have had either one of those jobs if he wanted it. But now that things have gone sideways, and you know, I thought about this, because when this originally came up, there's a part of me that if Matt Rule said, you know what, same for me. I'm not just going to cash checks. I'm going to talk with Dave Tepper, and we're going to find me a way to get me to Oklahoma. There's a part of me that would really respect that.
I told you, it's being whispered.
There's another part of me that would absolutely lose respect for Matt Rule.
If he left to go to college?
Well, yeah.
Why be mad at a man that's being honest with himself?
No. Because Matt Rule should have to lay in the bed that you and I have to lay in as somebody that follows this team. Well, I didn't choose Teddy Bridgewater.
He has a nicer bed.
I didn't choose Teddy Bridgewater. I didn't choose Sam Darnold. This isn't happening to Matt Rule. This isn't like life. Oh, life comes at you fast. No, you chose this life. You chose these players. So on one hand, if he does make what I think is an incredibly mature decision, there's something to be looked at and said, man, that takes a lot of guts to make. On the other hand, how dare you come waste 2 years of our time?
Well, it was worth a try. If you're him, you had to try it. It's a dream of his. He gave it a shot. I would respect a man or woman that looks themselves in the mirror, and in this case, looks us as the public, the paying public in the mirror, and go, you know what, guys, I gave it my best. This thing didn't work the way I wanted it to. I'm off to go do something else. I wish y'all the best. You know what's worse? Continuing to lie to himself and make things worse. We're going to give Matt Rule another draft and another free agency to put a worse offensive line back out there.
You know, guys, I just want to say that my family and I, we respect the Panther so much. In the last 28 games have been one of the true highlights of my life. And I don't even want to go to Oklahoma for $110 million. You know, I would stay, but, you know, it just makes more sense. And I just really, you know, thank you to Dave Tepper. And I'm going to keep pounding for the rest of my life. That's what I want to hear from Matt Rule.
I have no response. Can we go to number two, please?
Actually, we don't have time.
We're out. We can't even get to number two.
We can't even get to number two. That's how good number one was. 2 years? It's not Bobby Petrino.
Coaches,
it would not be Bobby Petrino.
Coaches have been murked for less than 2 years. It has happened. It's not groundbreaking. I would applaud David Tepper. Thank you for showing the stones.
Now show me.
To ripping the Band-Aid off.
Now show me how many NFL head coaches have left inside their first 2 years to go back to college.
Off top, I'm trying to think. Who went back?
And Bobby Petrino. Lou Holtz. I got two.
All right. So Matt Rule's not getting hired again as a head coach in the NFL after 2 years.
I just want to thank all the boosters. All right, guys. That does it for the rundown here.
You're
Scott Fowler.
Mean man.
He's going to join us next. We're going to get into
you're a very mean person.
His plans or his thoughts on how the Panthers should handle the quarterback situation moving forward on Sports Radio FNZ.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.